WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
That is chanting from the so-called Million Man March going on in Egypt today, somewhere between 100,000 and a million protesters. Some of the women, I presume, showed up in Tahrir Square in Cairo demanding the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak yet again. And it's not just in Cairo. Protests continue in Suez, Alexandria, and beyond. So while the Million Man March is happening in real Egypt, we are going to hear about what's happening in Little Egypt, in Astoria, and elsewhere in the New York region. Egyptian listeners, we are opening up the phones for you for the first few minutes of the program today. How are you feeling about what's happening in Egypt? What kinds of conversations are you having with your fellow Egyptian New Yorkers or with people back there? What's the mix of emotions for you? Is it mostly excitement, mostly fear, or confusion? Give us a call if you are an Egyptian living anywhere in our area, New York, New Jersey, or wherever. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. And since there is a partial communications blackout, the internet has been shut down by the Mubarak regime. Tell us what you are hearing by phone or however from your friends, relatives, other contacts in Egypt. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call us up right now, or you can comment on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And as your calls are coming in, we are joined by a couple of Egyptian expats from our area. Omar Shetta is a graduate student in the Departments of History and Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies at Columbia University, is that right?
NYU.
At NYU, forgive me for mentioning brand X. And also with us is Ahmed Shadid, who is the president of the Islamic Center in Jersey City. Ahmed Shadid, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I would like to welcome Brother Omar Shatta for being with the show for with us.
Omar, how are you feeling about all this?
Well, I'm very hopeful, but also worried. There is a lot of anticipation for what's going to happen today with the Million Man March.
Anticipation on the plus side and the minus side?
Yes, because of what happened with the disappearance of the police forces a few days ago and the looting that happened, there is a lot of anticipation that police agents and thugs not in uniform might provoke the army to intervene in ways that would ruin it for everyone.
Ahmed, do you have a largely Egyptian constituency at the Islamic Center in Jersey City, or very mixed?
No, actually, the Islamic Center of Jersey City was established by the Egyptian community in the beginning with other few brothers from other countries, but mainly Egyptian. Jersey City has the largest Egyptian community in New Jersey. I think maybe also the third or the fourth largest community in America.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Brother Omar about what he said. I've been meeting with different organizations and different people from my community, and we really worry about the people of Egypt. Sometimes the confusion about the old government, the new government, who's going to be ruling, how it's going to be ruling. Sometimes this is not the real concern. The real concern of the people there is standing in the street and what's going to happen to them. The real concern about the houses being broken in, the stores being robbed. The chaos is happening right now. A lot of hunger, the food supplies. How the people going to get, after they get out of this crisis, hopefully save and seeing some changes. But how the country going to survive after that? The economy has been destroyed. What our the Egyptian community here in America would do for them? Yes, we can go for rallies, and yes, we can do anything to support the Egyptian people, but in the meantime, the bottom line is what we're going to do in our real life. We're trying to organize fundraising everywhere, in all the mosques and churches and all the civil organizations to send support to them. So I'm asking everybody to do what they can. If you think the right is the best way to do it, it's fine. Sending letters to congressmen and senates, it's fine. Meeting officials here, it's fine. But we have to do something as a community. We have to show our support to our people there.
Ahmed, I appreciate your concern. And Omar, I think what we've heard from both of you now is that while the U.S. media may be focusing on the exhilaration of a pro-democracy movement, or also on questions of U.S. interests and things like that, a lot of what's coming out of the community itself is concern for the immediate safety of people with the situation with the police having disbanded, though I understand they're now being reformed, and concern about even food. Do you hear from your friends and relatives who you're in contact with that a food shortage may be looming?
Yes, not as severely as I just heard from Ahmed Shadid right now, but I think it's probably different in different parts of the country. Of course, people are running out of cash. ATM machines are down. Banks are closed. Stores, grocery stores are not receiving any supplies. So everyone is, I think that's probably the Mubarak strategy, is to take the steam out of this popular movement by making people tired and making them realize that they'll go short of food and money soon.
Or it may make them just more angry at him.
I think that's what's happening.
Let's take a phone call. Shireen in Brooklyn. Shireen, thanks so much for calling. You're
Thank
on
you,
WMRC.
Brian.
And you're Egyptian?
I am Egyptian. I was born in Egypt, and we moved to America when I was 5. And when I finished high school, I went back to Egypt, and I lived there for about 6 years. And the one thing people have never known about Egypt is how wonderful its people are and how warm. And the entire 6 years I was there, there was oppression every single day. And people would always put up their hands in the air and say, well, this is our lot. We can't do anything about it. Egypt has always been colonized. We're very open. We allow things to happen. And for 30 years, people have just been sitting on the sidelines saying, we can't do anything about this. And for the first time, they're finally able to stand up, and it's an exhilarating moment. And I'm here in New York, and all I want to do is get on a plane and get to Egypt and stand with my people, because it's the first time in my entire life that I'm proud to be Egyptian.
Wonderfully stated. And I wonder, Omar and Ahmed, do you also crave now to go there as soon as it's safe and breathe the air under what may soon be a post-Mubarak Egypt? Ahmed, how about for you?
Well, I'm glad to hear one of my younger sister saying that, and that's how I feel about the country. Yes, I was born a much longer time or before her, and I came here when I was really adult, and I feel the same thing. Even my kids who's born here. And my son was 13, who's been in Egypt only one time when he was 3. He's the one who asked me to go to the rally on Sunday. He said, we have to go, we have to go, we have to go. So it makes me so proud, and I really proud to hear this from my younger sister and the second generation here in America, raising their voices, support their beloved one there.
And Shireen, you can stay on if you want. We're
sure.
Going to add some other folks. Let's add Magda in Prospect Heights. Hi, Magda. You're also on WNYC with Ahmed, Omar, and Shireen. Hello. Magda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. I gather your father is Egyptian?
My father's Egyptian. I grew up here, but I've lived there a couple times. And he seems to be going through an interesting shift in perspective. He, first of all, hates Mubarak, and every year when I visit him, there's tirades every day against the regime and how they're letting Egypt go down the tubes. And he was supportive and kind of excited at the beginning, but when I spoke to him yesterday, he was calling the protesters stupid and saying they don't understand the bigger economic ramifications. And it just surprised me to see. I mean, I think he's just getting really scared and worried, but it seems to lead to a turning against the protesters, i.e., I think stability. He's so becoming so worried about stability that he's finding it hard to support the protesters.
Shireen, are you also hearing any of that from people back there?
I'm not hearing it so much from people back there, and I've been on the phone with my aunts. And my aunt, for example, she's very worried. She's scared. She can't get food. But she hasn't said anything about, no, we should stop these protests. However, my parents here do also think that the protesters are foolish and think that this is a joke and it's gonna end badly, and everyone should just go back home and accept what Mubarak has given them right now. Because they are scared, and my father is from the school that stability is more important than anything, and he's been known to say things like, Egyptians can't rule themselves, we don't have that civic culture, and these people are proving him wrong.
Also joining us now is Mustafa Ali. He's been organizing discussions among young people in Little Egypt in Astoria, Queens. Mustafa, thank you for joining us on WNYC.
Thank you.
Tell us about what kinds of discussions you've been organizing.
Well, basically, I wrote down a scenario of the safe states that would simply make Egypt a stable state once again, since what happened in the January incident. And that basically speaks about a transitional period of salvation government that would take Egypt to the safe side.
Right, the salvation
yeah.
government. And that's how Mohammed al-Baradei has put it, too. Rather than the phrase unity government, he's been talking about a salvation government.
Yes. And I also support him to be the president of this salvation government.
And to do what? What happens? What happens in your vision that you've been writing down after Mubarak presumably departs? What happens after a revolution?
Okay, we know very well how Mubarak ruled Egypt. Egypt used to be a very strong country when it comes to government. It's a very powerful government, so it's not easy to pull out the authority from them. In order for you to do that, you have to organize certain things. In order to start a state once again, you have to have unity, and you have to have a new parliament. And you have to make the country stabilized by just telling everybody to stay in his place. Like, I'm talking about all the secretaries or ministers or whatever you want to call them. I'm talking about the army generals and colonels. Everybody stay in his place and listen to the new government.
For an orderly transition. Of course, everybody staying in his place is one of the things, Omar, that characterized, an autocratic rule. The leader of the country being able to tell everyone to stay in his place. So, Omar Shetta, from your vantage point as a history and Middle Eastern studies and Islamic studies graduate student at NYU, what kind of historical perspective comes into play in your thinking and the conversations that you and your peers are having in terms of what comes next?
I think this is a particularly critical point, because this is when it's time for people to articulate their demands in more specific terms. You can start seeing the conflicts. People are now having discussions about whether a new constitution needs to be written or just a few articles need to be amended, whether Mubarak needs to leave right now or whether he can stay but not run in the upcoming election, and so on. So it's very we're very hopeful that now with Baradei and other opposition leaders are actually coming together and trying to formulate a number of demands that there will be a consensus over.
Let me also bring in Bassem in Manhattan, who's calling as an Egyptian New Yorker. Bassem, we can't, okay. We'll bring in Bassem in a minute, but who wants to react, who hasn't spoken in a little while? Shireen, Magda, anybody else about what you've been hearing the last few minutes?
Okay, I would like to mention one more thing.
Is that Mustafa?
Yes, that's Mustafa. I would like to mention one more thing, that you're going to find this scenario published in YouTube under the Bayan of the Egyptian people, or Bayan al-Sha'b al-Masri, That's how it's written down, as a matter of fact. Everybody's going to listen to it, and it carries all the safe sticks that will take Egypt to a safe place.
I understand. I want to get some other voices back in. Shireen, Magda, what are you thinking?
This is Shireen. I was just saying that Egypt, this isn't existing in a political vacuum. We have a constitution. We have political parties, and the mechanisms are there. We do have the tools to transition this. And the fear that's on CNN and on all the media, and when I'm walking down the street and people are so afraid that it's going to be chaos and there's just an empty vacuum, this is really not the case. We have a constitution, we have a rich history, and we have rich political parties who are going to be able to lead our country into a democracy.
Let me thank you, Shireen, for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. It's
and
been a pleasure.
I'm going to bring in next, also to this conversation with everybody else, Bassam in Manhattan. Hi, Bassam.
Yeah, how you doing, sir? I'm really afraid from the Muslim Brotherhood to take over the power right now in Egypt. And then we are, as a Christian, we will have no rights because the Muslim Brotherhood, they said Islam is the solution.
Bassam, your family is Egyptian Christians. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we are Egyptian Christians. All my family over there in Egypt, except me. All my family, my five brothers and sisters and my cousins and everybody over there. And I am so scared as a Christian from the Muslim Brotherhood, because Muslim Brotherhood right now, they say Islam is a solution. And I see now in Tahrir Square so many faces. They were talking before about how Osama bin Laden, Sheikh Osama bin Laden, is a great man and how he is a good man. And this guy, his name is Diyar Ashwan. And I saw him yesterday. He was in the middle of those guys. So I'm afraid, I'm really afraid of Muslim Brotherhood, especially when I see Muhammad al-Baradi all the time is talking to them, and he is taking them as a group to support him.
Al-Baradi is taking their support. So Ahmed Shadid, as president of the Islamic Center in Jersey City, how do you hear Bassam's fear?
Well, I understand what Bassam is saying, and I hear that from a lot of my Coptic colleagues and friends here, which I, yes, I might have a concern over that, but knowing what the Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood stand in Egypt, they are at least they are the closest Islamic movement to the Coptic Church. They have a lot of ties with them. And also, they don't have that much power to take over the government. They might be, yes, one of the strongest opposition, but they're going to be. We have another bodies there. We have the WEFD, we have the Tahrir, we have different people are running. The representative and the Muslim Brotherhood do not control the street. I don't think the Egyptian people would give them that support to have a government.
Magda, are you hearing from your dad back in Egypt this as a topic?
Yeah, no, but I can say that a friend of mine who's been involved in democracy activism for years at a group called Kefaya, which got a lot of press overseas but very little support from even people on the street at home, which gives perspective to how huge it is that everybody came out. But anyway, at some point they formed an alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood maybe 5 or 6 years ago to try to push the democracy movement forward, and I just remember being incredibly impressed by that, and it made me rethink what I thought about the Muslim Brotherhood. I hear the caller who's Christian, I hear him totally, and it doesn't mean the Muslim Brotherhood is the best thing that ever happened, but that really made an impression on me that they were willing to join with this largely secular group, Kefaya, to try to move things forward. So, no, but my dad, no, I can't talk about that.
Mustafa in Little Egypt on Steinway Street, you want a last word here?
Yes, I would have to mention the same thing that Mr. Baradi said about the Muslim Brotherhood. It represents a chunk, a big chunk of the Egyptian society.
He says 20% only. That was his quote.
No.
Well, politically wise, yes, but publicly wise, it represents, I think, more than that. I would say 40% or 50%.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's a very important issue. And I'm very sure because I have I have known so many people of them, either here in the United States or in Egypt, that, mm-hmm. that talks just like them and acts just like them. They do not represent any danger, and I assure this 100%. They do not represent any danger, and like Tarek said, that they have very strong ties with the church in Alexandria and in Cairo, and they have very very strong relationship with the Christians in Egypt. You see the thing that Egypt, yes, like any other state, have extremists from here and there, and the extremists try to make things fearful for other people to divide the country.
Now we're just about out of time in this segment, and listeners will be talking more about the Muslim Brotherhood in particular next hour and El Baradei's relationship to it. Omar, do you want to conclude with kind of an Islamic studies graduate student perspective
on where
the Muslim Brotherhood fits in?
I want to say that the Muslim Brotherhood did not spearhead this movement, so far they're not dominant within it. Of course, they're part of the political spectrum in Egypt, and of course they're not popular among liberals, including myself, not only among religious minorities. But if a proper representative government mechanism is put in place, and a constitution that's written is agreed upon among different opposition groups
with secular controls.
Exactly, their power would be checked, even if they're better positioned to rule once this episode is over.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining our informal roundtable here of Egyptian New Yorkers and New Jerseyans, Ahmed and Bassem and Magda and Mustafa and Omar and Shireen, who was on with us earlier. This has been a wonderful conversation, and good luck to all of you and your families and for wonderful change in your country of origin. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, we have a lot of coverage yet to come on this show as we proceed through the morning. Then a couple of things coming up this afternoon that I want to tell you about. Right after the show at 12 o'clock noon, we will have a live online chat about Egypt and the Arab democracy movement generally. Our special guests will include Egypt expert Stephen Zunis and Lawrence Pintak, former CBS News Middle East correspondent. So we hope you can join us for our live chat on our politics website. It's afreecountry.org at 12 o'clock noon. And then WNYC AM will air 4 hours of special coverage from the BBC this afternoon, beginning at 1 o'clock. So that's 4 hours of special coverage on AM 820 starting at 1 after our live chat at noon on itsafreecountry.org, and more coverage on the program this morning. But coming up next in just 1 minute, our other lead story today, as Governor Cuomo prepares this afternoon's budget address, he has called the current budget process a sham because 13% increases in education and Medicaid spending, he says, are built in by law, not by human budget making. So we will get reaction from Democratic and Republican lawmakers and ask them if this can change coming up next.